Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, we have a woman who holds two very distinct titles, the Director of Instruction for Mayfair Lakes Golf Club, as well as the Assistant Coach for the UBC Women's Golf Team, Ms. Carrie Moffitt. Carrie has been with the UBC team for 10 years and has seen her squad rack up the titles, including the national title in 2019. Carrie's father and grandfather were both club professionals, so it was no surprise when she decided to go down the same path, but her takes on the game and the business are surely a bit different than the generations before her. So without further ado, let's get into our interview with Coach Moffitt.
Welcome to the 4Jack Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the 4Jack Podcast, brought to you by Jackson Labs, the brand consultants that we trust to get our brand going in the right direction, and the brand consultants you should use to do the same. So go on over to jacksonlabs.com and see what they can do for you. Back in it here today, a lovely, honestly, seemingly lovely day. It looks like we might be turning the corner into hopefully summer here. But fun guest, a fun day. But let's get into what the other boys are doing first. Let's head on down to AZ. Tombo, how are you, sir?
Doing good, brother. Just got back from a quick emergency nine in the afternoon. And yeah, it was a beautiful time. Yeah, nice. That was spoiled, living the dream. I got a lot of things on the plate this week, so it was the only day I could fit it in. But I am excited about this next guest because, as we all know, not 100% sure when this will be released, but we just had the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Big thing for women's golf. So it's nice to sit down with someone that's in the, obviously coaching women's golf at UBC.
Absolutely. Parks, how are you, sir?
I just want to do this really quick.
Just quick ad.
I'm not really happy with this person here. Oh,
I thought you were saying the mat doesn't work for you.
The perfect practice putting mat.
Coming hot off the Masters. Yeah, a little disappointed with the finish. I've been working on my game a little bit. I'm not really sure if I'm dialed into the perfect practice mat anymore, considering Dustin Johnson lost me a lot of money. But our next guest might be able to get my putting dialed in for the season, so I'm excited to dive into it with her.
Yeah, I think this person might just have the answers you need. She is the Director of Instruction at Mayfair Lakes Golf Country Club, as well as the Assistant Coach for the UBC Women's Golf Team. It's Carrie Moffitt. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
A lot better now. There's so much to talk about.
Oh,
like,
is there ever?
What's on that fridge?
I'm not telling you. I cannot reveal what that is right there.
Let's give a little context for our listeners. So typically we have our guests in a nice setting. There's usually a window, some pictures. Today we're absolutely just overwhelmed with a fridge that's got a lot of stuff on it. So maybe just talk us through your fridge and your whole aura of fridge right now.
What is on here? Just a lot of stickers from all my travels.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And my sister is a musician, so I've got stuff about her and some playlists from like musicians that I've stolen from stages.
Sick.
I have a picture of Smooth's on my fridge.
Wow. Oh yeah, shout out Smooth.
Yeah. From we played in the UBC fundraiser last year.
Is that the T-Bird scram?
What's that?
Is that the Thunderbird scramble or?
Yeah. Yeah, the fundraiser for the team where we raised tons of money. But it was a little strange this year because of COVID, so they couldn't do the after auction stuff. So it was mostly done online. And
yeah.
So it was a little, well, I got to play with Smooth, so that was fun.
I've had that experience with Mr. Fraser Mulholland a couple of years ago. We actually won that event, so.
Oh, okay.
Very cool. I know it's a good time. Yeah, I got shoes somewhere, blue shoes that we won for the event or something. I don't know.
Pretty weird. Easy when you're playing with an absolute stick like Fraser. Jeez, I mean, the guy doesn't miss a fairway, doesn't miss putts.
Yeah, I was the bagger. I was the 30-yard bagger, so I was just there to make chips and putts.
I tell you, that guy's shoulders, he might have the biggest shoulders in Vancouver for most guys that he plays with.
No golf scorecards or anything unique like that on the fridge? No reminders? Positive affirmations?
Oh no, but every one of my passwords, well, I'm just revealing my password. But every one of my passwords, no matter what, will always have, so I've never broken 70, so all of my passwords have 69 in it. Oh, so nice. that's my reminder. That's my daily affirmation.
Always a good number. Daily punch in the face.
Well, before we derail here and go a direction that we were kind of hoping to go down, but not really.
That's a different show.
Yeah, that's the after hours show. Before we go into your UBC career here and what you're doing at Mayfair Lakes, Tom brought up something interesting in the intro there, and I really want your take on this. Augusta Women's Am, huge for the game. I get it. And I love the fact that it's there. But why is the LPGA not doing it? And what is your thoughts on that?
I think golf in general is just behind the times when it comes to
because amen.
We're digging deep. We're down a rabbit hole already, guys.
Perfect.
So like when you compare golf to, say, you know, women's basketball and what's happening there, or a lot of the different, like even women's hockey, you've got a lot of the men's players, men's teams advocating for females. Because if you think about it, we aren't really the ones that can advocate for ourselves. We try, but, you know, we're the minority.
So you have to get all the stakeholders involved to be like, no, like, you're the only ones thinking that this isn't the way it is. Like, what are we going to do? And I think it's the CEO or whoever it was from Barstool, because she was involved with that women's hockey league. And then there was that big kerfuffle about it. And I remember just hearing all these people are like, you shouldn't be alienating this woman, because she is like one of your best assets for helping grow this game. Like, what are you guys doing right now? Or ladies?
Yeah, no, I agree. I watched a video. I think it was last year before the US Open, the women's US Open. And they had four women on this, just like a Q&A about women in sport and why are we not getting TV coverage? Why are we not getting endorsements? Why are we not selling stuff? And it's because, you know, when you can't even find women's sports on TV, you can't sell the story of who the players are, and you can't fall in love with the players. And then how can they sell stuff when you can't even find them? So it just is such a trickle down effect, and it's really just golf's a little bit behind, I believe, you know, and it's just the system that we're in. So I just think that the best thing to do is just to get men and women both advocating for this.
Totally. It's funny. Mike Wan, I heard him on a podcast one time talking about the coverage of the LPGA, and they were like, hey, why can't you just pick like a different time so you're not conflicting with the PGA? And he's like, you know what's actually the best is when the PGA is clicking and we follow directly after, because people are still watching. They haven't left the couch yet. As soon as it turns on, oh, didn't even know this was on. Yeah, sure, I'll watch it. But it's like you need that like unbelievably symbiotic relationship to happen in order for any sort of growth on the LPGA side. And it's like, God, why can't you just not have to rely on that? Like, I remember, to go back to Augusta Am, I mean, I remember when they announced it and be like, hey, that is really cool. That's amazing. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, the best female players in the world aren't playing there.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you not think, though, that now you're starting to see a lot more of a presence on social media and media in general for a lot of these younger college players? Because before, it was the highlight or the focus was on the developmental tours for PGA, and they were kind of breeding these guys to be the superstars and breeding these guys to be in the spotlight. Now you see a lot more attention towards college players. So I think that, as you said, yeah, we're still behind the times, but I mean, there's definitely a bit of a change of the guard happening.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's also a bit of a fine line for women in sport and also women in golf when it comes to social media, because I hate to see some of these really talented girls going down the wrong roads because of likes and, you know, traction based on, you know, what they're posting versus, I mean, like literally I'm in a hoodie and a Titleist hat and this is what I do all day, every day, you know, but when you look at some of the girls that are out there, they, you know,
It's a little scantily clad sometimes.
It's tough because I think social media for women is you kind of have two roads to go, and it's just nice to see more players out there showing women that you can do it this way. Mm-hmm. You don't have to take off your clothes. You can do it this way.
Yeah, the thirst trap mentality versus like the Brené Brown inspirational, good, strong pillar look. Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to
go down
say
that road.
Yeah, it's a little too much sometimes. I think Paige is a little aggressive, offensive, but I mean, from a male viewership standpoint, obviously that's what sells, right? So,
well, it sells, right? So, but I guess you have to decide what you want to sell.
But then there's a good friend of the show, Tanya Tare, that's doing golf trick shots. She's got multiple amazing sponsors, and she's not taking off her clothes, but she's doing something fun and engaging. So,
yeah.
I guess it's a race to the top, right?
Exactly. Let's talk about something fun and engaging. Talk to us about UBC golf.
Yes.
I mean, such an exceptional squad. Among the nation, I mean, you're looking at like probably one of the top teams. And I mean, what is that experience like, just getting in there? Like, I don't even know how long you've really been there for, but I mean, the fact that you can be involved in this team, involved in UBC, which is so big, what is that whole experience like?
I just absolutely love it, to be honest. It's been, I think, 10 years.
Wow.
We've won 3 NAI championships, and I think, God, at least since I've been part of it, I think 10 Canadian championships. No, wow. Sorry, 8. I think we lost 2. But yeah, it's been, it's the highlight of my career. I absolutely love what I do. I love connecting with the girls in a long-term basis. You really have to dig in to get to know a player, and especially when you get to hang out with them for 4 years and you get to travel with them on the road, you really do get to see all their ins and outs and their ups and downs. And you know, a lot of times it's nothing to do with technical. It could be something else that's going on with them. And just really being curious enough to dig deep and unpack some shit on the road and see what's going on. And all that I really do when I travel with them is I just try to get them in their best place mentally and physically so that they can just do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
That's super nice.
What about like some of, I mean, like you said, you know, being that decorated over this time, I mean, you must have seen some incredible players come out of this program. Like, how many girls have you seen go on to, say, Symetra or even LPGA, or, you know, sniff the LPGA or play well on these mini tours? It must be so rewarding when you see one of these girls come out of there and be like, oh, cool, you're going to play.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. We've had a few girls come out. Now, Kyla Inaba, she was the year before me, but she did tour around, I think, Australia and down in the States and played. And now she's a teaching pro up in the interior. But, you know, I guess the thing that I believe in is if you can see it, you can be it. And I think I've seen girls come out of the program, and I'm trying to think how many now, but there's, you know, several, like Kat Kennedy, Stephanie Wong, I'm sure I'm forgetting many, but that have turned pro and now they're teaching. Like Stephanie, she's teaching little kids, which is what I started doing when I first turned pro. And so it's really fun to see these girls kind of, you know, come out of that program and take that road that I'm currently on. It just kind of proves the point that, you know, the more women that you put in these roles, like director of instruction or a head golf professional, or in like put them at the boardroom tables and get them making decisions, it, you know, you just inspire that younger generation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it's so instrumental too, being on the golf course as well. For how long has this game been kind of looked at as like, oh yeah, it's where the men go and do the business? Like, man, some of these girls, they'll take your money, and they should be out there doing the business like everyone else. Like, I mean, that's where a lot of times, that's where they build a lot of relationships. Anyone does.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you be there? What I do really want to cover really quickly is like, what has it been like since you started to now when it comes to coaching? Like, say the introduction of TrackMan or all the equipment that comes along with it. Like, that's something that, like, how has the skill level of these players been since, you know, 10 years, 8 years ago? What is the difference now compared to then?
Well, I'm grateful that I've started teaching and coaching before technology, because you had to really dig it out of the dirt and learn how to communicate and work on your observation skills, you know? And so now the introduction of technology for me in my career has really elevated me to get results a lot faster. And it's just more tangible and, you know, the proof is in the numbers. So it's a little bit easier navigating through a lot of that stuff. The girls now are like, they're ridiculous. Like, they hit it so hard. And our team is known, like, I mean, up in the Pacific Northwest, we need club head speed. We need ball speed. We have to hit it far because we basically have to get it in the air. Mm-hmm. Because, and then we get down into Arizona, California, wherever we play. And we tend to be one of the longest hitters in the tournaments we play. Maybe not D1. We're probably middle of the pack. Some of our better players would probably give them a run for their money on distance. But D2 NAI, we're often the longest down there. And these girls just freaking bomb it.
What's the experience like on the range with the girls? Is it more like Bryson sort of feel where they're just so dedicated to getting to numbers and getting to results? Or is it still a lot of field player out there?
It just depends on the player. You know, Tim Wilson, who's at Shaughnessy, he does a lot of the TrackMan stuff on Wednesdays. We usually practice with them Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So he does a lot of the TrackMan numbers. And, you know, but it really does depend on the player, because some players really get into it and some players just want to be told a feel, and they don't want to get too overly involved past, like, you know, some information and data. But a lot of it, that's the one thing that I think I've learned so much in my 10 years, even from those first couple years. You really have to get to know what works for each player. Because I think a lot of coaches fall into a trap where they have one style, which is the way they learn. And then they just make you learn that way. And so that person will really do well with a certain player, like a dominant coach will do really well with a dominant player. But you get somebody else that might have a little bit of insecurities or whatever it is and just needs a little bit. They need a hug. And, you know, a dominant coach will probably derail that player. So for me, I'm the hugger. So I had to learn how to teach and coach a dominant player, which was a bit of a learning curve for me. But I think it's really important to be able to coach the player and their style and how they really retain that information.
I think that it's kind of interesting, yeah, just like how you develop different types of people and the role that the coach plays in that. And like in the world we live in with so much data and like all these things that you can be measuring, it's kind of like, yeah, how do you got to have that person in your life that knows how to like simplify the entire matrix of all the things you could be absorbing and realize who you are as a person and like, okay, let's focus on these things right now. And then as a player, I would imagine, it's a lot because golf comes down to confidence, like really at the end of the day, like anyone that's probably playing at UBC women's golf, like has something going for them as far as their golf swing goes. But then it's like part of that process of like showing up on the first day, doing well. And then like you watching them through that and being like, hey, like I recognize, remember that girl that helped us win nationals a few years ago? Like I see a bit of her in you. And like I watched her go through this struggle that like is similar, but maybe different because of what you're battling here. Maybe it's a relationship with their family or like, you know, cause those are the things that really affect performances. Like you're not thinking about the task. You're thinking about like this other stuff, clouding it in. And then your job and what is probably really great for them is to have someone that can be like, no, like in your world, this has worked before. And then they can start to believe in that process, which is neat.
I think you bring up a good point there as well. Like being at UBC, you got something going on with your swing. I think anyone, any good player that has a swing coach or is playing on a legit team, they're all great. But like even Butch Harmon said this years ago, he's like, every PGA Tour player is good enough to be here. They all just need to be coddled. They just need a little pat on the back. You're good, buddy. You're good. That's all it is. But like, yeah, that's transition from, say, the dominant player to now stepping back and be like, okay, I'm not going to be the dominant coach. Like, I grew up with a dominant coach.
Yeah.
Not coach. He's my head pro. Come on. I'm not that good.
But he was like,
I'm not nearly good enough for that.
I was just texting to somebody in LA about this comment who was once a golf professional, and then all of a sudden they talk about it like they played with Tiger and they were on the tour.
No. Come on.
Got caught red-handed here.
That's purely like, hey, Al, I got a problem, man. But it was the same thing. He's like, yep, that's how you got to do it. Fix it. Pull it back. Let's go through. Same thing that he taught every single guy for 20 years. But that's the dominant coach. But how do you, what were the things that you picked up to try and be like, okay, I'm not going to be the dominant coach. I'm going to deal with the dominant player. But like you said, you'll be the hugger.
The first introduction, I had a lot of observation skills. I read people's body language. I'm very observant and I notice things, but I never really understood how to put that into like a coaching way. And it wasn't until I got to go down to do the Vision 54 with Pia and Lynn. And, you know, that's exactly what they coach, was the idea that you really have to match your player. You have to match their learning style and their energy. And you have to basically just know what it is that they need in that moment. Because some of those players really do want the encouragement. Could be in the middle of a round and they just came off a double. And, you know, they're just, you know, you got this, don't worry, you're such a good player, whatever. And then the next girl that comes through, and maybe she had a double, and she wants me to scream at her. Mm-hmm. So like, get your shit together and stop. And then they are all of a sudden off and running. So it's, you know, I think it's just really having time with the players too. You know, when you get to spend 4 years with them, you really get to know each other, especially when you're traveling and you're sleeping on airport floors and missing flights. And
yeah, you see how they react to stressful environments and all the way success when things are going good, and it's like, hey, someone got upgraded, right? And it's like, okay, are you happy? Are you like, I should have been the one that got upgraded in my flight or whatever, you know, like that, all those little things like are clues into like, yeah, are you the type of person that I need to just say, hey, focus, like give a little, hey, get your act together? Or is it like, you're really hard on yourself and I can see that, and like, you don't need anyone else to beat you up right now. It's just like, hey man, like, or hey woman, right? Since we're covering all of the things today. It's cool to know that. I did see in our show notes that you are an expert situational negotiator. I don't know if that's like a thing or like,
I don't even know what that is, but I like it.
We almost went so deep into negotiation talk today. Like, you don't even know.
We want to know. Okay.
It's almost full salivating.
We want to know about your time in Hawaii. You said to ask about something about Hawaii. So that was the expert negotiation.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to shift gears a little bit here. We're going to talk about something a little more fun.
So it's my most embarrassing story of all time.
Oh,
wow. Okay. More than the fridge.
Way more than the fridge. Oh, 1,000 times. Okay. Yeah. This is nothing. This is PG.
That's on display.
Yeah. We're just getting to know her slowly. Yeah.
We're going to have to stop this and run the parental advisory for this next segment.
Can you read the Bet99 disclosure, Chris?
Yeah. Terms and conditions apply. Go ahead. Yeah.
So I had never been to Hawaii. And we had won nationals the 2019. So part of our schedule for the fall for the next season, the head coach got us into the Hawaii event. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I've never been, this is amazing. So I had asked him, because we were both going over, and I had asked him if I could go early. I have a friend who lives in Maui, and so I was going to go stay with her for a couple of days and then just hop a flight over to Oahu, which is where the event was. It was all set and perfect and everything was great. get over to Honolulu, get the rental car, and my one and only job was to check into our Airbnb, which was this pretty cool house right on the ocean. And I got to the house and met the caretaker, got the keys, and everything was great. It was like 4 o'clock and I'm like, it's the first time I had some time to myself. I'm in Hawaii and by myself. It's amazing. Hang out on the beach for a couple hours. And then I'm like, okay, well, I have to go back and pick up the team because they're landing at 10. And so I go in, have a shower, and come back outside because it's like this really cool compound, and go outside. I was going to hang the beach towel. This is a shower, I'm in a towel, and this gust of wind comes up and the door shuts on the house. No. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I go to try to open the door and it's locked. It's an automatic locking door. Everything I have, my phone, the keys, everything is in the house. And I'm locked out in Hawaii in a towel.
I've been afraid.
And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? I'm in a foreign country in a towel. I have nobody's number. I can't even go borrow somebody's cell phone because I don't even have any. Who knows somebody's number these days? So I get panic and I'm like, okay, Carrie, calm down. How are we getting out of this? And so I can hear next door some music and I can see some lights. And I was like, oh, okay, well, okay, Carrie, suck it up. You got to go next door in a towel. And then it's dark, almost dark at this point. I can't really see anything because, of course, I don't have my phone, so I don't have a flashlight or anything. And I trip over a rock, break my toe.
Oh.
And then I walk around this guy's house and I can hear like the music like pumping from like the front or the, I guess, the ocean side of the house. And I come around the corner and I literally crashed an all guys weekend.
Wow. They were like, who hired?
She shows up in a towel. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, you have got to be kidding me. And they're looking at me. They're like, can we help you? I'm like, I really hope so. Yeah. Anyway, they don't know the owners because they rented that house. Yeah. And it wasn't just, it was a bunch of dads and they had all their kids there, but it was all just dudes. And so they basically, I got to know these guys over the next couple hours and they're like, do you want a beer? I was like, oh yeah. So now we're like, we're trying to find the rental on Airbnb. We're trying to find everything. I don't know how I'm getting back in this house and hours are going on and I have to get back to pick up the team. And the one guy looks at me, he's like, what kind of windows are over there? And I said, and I looked at theirs and I'm like, they're kind of like those like slat windows. And he's like, I'm like, they're exactly like yours. And he's like, oh, okay. And then, I don't know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes go by. And he's like, well, should we go over and break into your place? I said, well, how are we going to do it? Are we going to smash a window? He's like, oh, no. As soon as you told me you had these windows, I knew we could just slide the slats out and we could just crawl in. I said, you left me sitting here for 45 minutes? He's like, yeah, we just love having you here. So we walk over, we shove one of the little kids, like the 7-year-old kid, through the window and get my keys just in time to go pick up the girls. Oh, it was the most embarrassing moment of my life.
That's amazing.
Anyway, they
got a beer out of the deal. That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. And they invited me over the next day. I walk around. They're like, they call me Towel now. So no, they call me One Towel. That's what it was. I went over and had a couple beers with them the next day, fully clothed. And we became friends over my most embarrassing story of all time. And then I had to walk the golf course in sandals because I couldn't.
Oh yeah, the toe. I forgot the toe was broken.
Full on broke your toe.
I mangled it. It was pretty good.
God, that's horrible.
Well, okay. So how did the girls play in Hawaii then? Even with your broken toe,
they played actually pretty well. It was a D1 event, and when we play that caliber of golfer, we're more just trying to figure out where we measure up and things we need to work on. But yeah, it was one of our more successful D1 results. I think we're like probably middle of the pack, which was decent for us.
Solid.
Yeah.
How did you manage throughout the week with the bum toe?
It wasn't good.
anybody step on it or kick you? Usually that's what happens.
No, I did smash it on the car though. I think it was like day 3 and it was like, oh,
Oh,
that's strong.
A couple of small words come out of the mouth at that point.
That's a tough scene.
What was the playing schedule like for you guys, coaching and traveling like that? I mean, you don't have to go into too many details, but like, is it a pretty heavy, hectic schedule, or is it just a lot of local stuff?
So in the fall, our fall season, we try to stay somewhat close to home. So we travel down to Washington, Oregon. Sometimes we'll fly. I mean, we did the Hawaii trip. Sometimes we'll fly to California just to do one trip. And then the spring season is pretty full on. We're pretty much on planes every probably 3-4 weeks. So we'll play 3 to 4 regular season. We'll play regionals. Then we play nationals, US nationals. And then we come straight back up and we play Canadians. And then you're usually done. But this year, it's all canceled.
I feel like they should have some sort of PNC styled event where like the coaches play with them and like you all compete for who is the most superior of them all, right? Including the coaches. Cause I don't know. I just had this idea, like you're in Hawaii, you're playing golf. It'd be hard for me not to try and like look like a college kid and sneak out there and play myself. Right. Like, it'd be tough. It'd be tough. They should have an event for you.
Give her a little look at the Tennessee waterfall you got going. They might
they'll allow you on with that.
Oh, like that's solid.
It's like that movie, the Ladybugs, right? Where the soccer danger field to have Justice kid up like a girl. Like, I know I don't want to go too far down this road because there are situations that are like
sideways.
We don't even go down there.
It's all good. Kerry, why don't we shift gears here a little bit? Why don't you take us on a deep dive all the way back to your introduction to the game and who was instrumental in your journey of golf and the pursuit of professionalism?
Well, I'm a daughter of a golf pro.
Oh, okay.
And my grandfather was a golf pro.
Oh, so I was Justin Thomas of Canada.
Yeah, I was destined to be in this. I fought it. I fought it in my late teens. You know, I was trying to find myself. As my dad he was a head pro. He was a teacher and a club fitter. And so that was kind of like the basement in my house just smelled like Marsol, and I knew how to re-grip clubs and, you know, probably by the age of like 7.
was he in the days of like owning the shop and owning the range? Yeah. Okay. So there is a lot more intermingling at that point then than just man in the till.
Yeah, it was good. He went through a transition where the board did take that. I mean, as every head pro, that kind of seems to be the story. Yeah. But yeah, it was a pretty good childhood, to be honest. I mean, golf for me, I mean, the house we lived in was right on the golf course too. So, you know, I would just get dropped off after school at the course, and I just was so annoying that my dad just put me on the payroll because I just would go out and pick up balls on the range. He's like, fine, I'll pay you.
Sounds like a dream.
It's like, man, I bought my own shag bag.
Yeah, it's a good life. To be honest, golf was kind of my escape from, you know, your teenage angst and all that stuff.
Is your dad still around? Is he still in the game?
No, he passed away 9 years ago. But he was in golf his entire life. Yeah.
It's very interesting when your family is kind of tied into that, though. I mean, it means so much more, I guess. I mean, because I watched, you know, like I mentioned, my old head pro earlier, he had 2 sons, and not that they were involved in the game, but they spent enough time at the club. And it's like, yeah, you guys grow up here. Like, this isn't just a club. This is your other home.
It really was. Yeah. I did my homework, and because my mom was the golf shop manager too. So it was really a family. And my sister also worked in the back shop. So all 4 of us were there. So it was,
Aunt Trudy was lunch lady in the restaurant or what? Sloppy Joe's. Oh, it's amazing. How long have you been a professional? Maybe give us a little talk through what the transition was like when you kind of found out you wanted to make that leap and turn pro and chase it a little bit.
Yeah, so I was, I think, a year or two before, is it Title IX? I think that's what it was, where they had to equalize scholarships between men and women.
Okay. Yeah.
So I missed that by, I think, a year or two when I was going to school. So the girls in Ontario that were, you know, winning, I was like in Ontario, my last provincials, I think I finished about, I think it was like top 12, you know, but the girls winning were still only getting like half rides in the States. So, you know, I explored it a little bit, but it was going to be too expensive. And, you know, I think part of me maybe just didn't have the confidence to do it too, and really chase that. And that was my rebellion years where I stayed in Canada and I got a degree in environment and resource management at the University of Western in London. And cool. I basically just quit golf. That was it. You know, they had a men's golf team, but they wouldn't let me try out for it. And then I hung it up for a few years. And then I got to the end of my degree and I was like, well, this is garbage. I don't want to do this. And I started hitting balls that summer. And I was like, I think you're going to go try turn pro. I had no business passing. I hadn't even touched a club in 4 years. And the guys in the back shop guys, the course that I was working, because I graduated up to like working in the golf shop, they'd all placed bets on how badly I was going to fail. And I was so mad. And that fueled me. Those back shop kids fueled me to pass. I was so mad. And I careered it.
Backshop kids are really mutants though, aren't they? Like they are just, at times they are the scum of the earth and yet you love them to death.
Yes, like, I just guess.
There's just something about them. Like you want to punch them in the face but hug them at the same time.
No.
I don't know. But what is environment and human resource management? What is that? What does that entail is what I'm very interested in here.
That means mom and dad leave me alone.
Is that like Greenpeace?
I think that let me sounds go like join you could that. Oversee a golf course really well to me, like just based on high level thinking.
It was basically I was going to save the world, you know?
Become like a sea shepherd.
Yeah, I was going to like, you know, save the oceans and, you know, okay. So I think it was my third year when I can't remember, I was in like one class and it was something to do with just, you know, our waste. It was like a waste management type thing where like how much garbage there is in the world and how are we going to make a difference and a change. And I looked around and I would say I'd spent 3 years with these people and there was probably 20 Tim Hortons cups. Like nobody had a reusable cup. They all had like, and I'm like, if we can't get the people who are paying a lot of money to learn this stuff to change, how the hell am I going to finish this degree and make any difference? We can't even change.
Have you watched that Seaspiracy movie or doc yet?
No.
Oh, like, man. It was shocking. I don't like it. Like, even when you learn about, like, that Pacific garbage patch.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, God. Like, it's how big? I mean, the size, like, three times Texas. The size of France? Yeah, it's like the size of Texas. And you're like, I don't know, man. Like, and then it splits up and... it is just gross, like what we actually do, and you're just like, God, there's no way we're helping this at any time, anytime soon here.
I will say that I'm going to be pulling this video clip of you saying that because I haven't heard that argument really. Like, it's like we all as a collective need to do better, but I don't hear too many people saying, "Hey, if you can't get the folks," and maybe it's changed a little to now because I'm sure it has, like for sure. But like, it is interesting that the people in the class paying all this money, they're just not seeing it, right? Like the brain is blocking out like the ignorance of all of it. But yeah, that's crazy. Interesting. You were gonna say
that is a legit statement for sure. It's like, you know, the very apparent and obvious is before us and we can't even handle that. So like how are we supposed to save the earth? Scary. Anyway, let's not get too far down the hugging dolphins and
we haven't even touched on Mayfair Lakes.
Saving the bees. Yeah, let's talk about Mayfair Lakes.
It's just such a great place. It's like my home.
You've been there for a few years now.
Yeah, 15 years, I think. Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad. Little run.
Yeah, it's been a great place. I mean, I have a lot of support. I've been lucky to have some really good head pros that have been really supportive of me. Just great supportive guys in my career.
We at Parks and I had the chance to come down there and meet Smeddy. And that guy seems like an absolute gem.
Smedge, he's just a great GM and friend. And yeah, you know, we're just sitting there. We've been out there a long time. Smet actually, him and I got hired the same week. So we've been, we've been through this journey together, him and I. So it's been fun. He's great.
It's amazing. And you kind of graduated from, were you assistant or associate teaching pro or golf shop staff through to teaching, or how did that
work? No, I just kind of walked into the role. There was a couple of guys there when I first got hired, and they didn't really last. They just went back to the facility they were teaching at before. And I just kind of walked into the job. And, you know, I had worked previously at Westwood Plateau. That was my first teaching gig with Doug Hasey. That's a local legend. And he kind of taught me so much about running an academy and the people that I was there with. My really good friend, Jen, she was running the shop too. And just learning as much as I could on how to run a pretty successful academy. And then I just took what I learned from there and applied it to Mayfair, and it kind of worked. And now we have 5 full-time instructors. And
I do have a question that I would like to ask. For the people that play golf in the Lower Mainland area that may not have gone and played Mayfair Lakes yet, I don't know, maybe not, but what kind of vibe, what's the golf course like? Like, yeah, maybe paint that picture of what do we get when we show up there? Is it tree-lined fairway? Like, yeah.
Lakes.
I was going to say.
Water is
what. The name didn't give it away.
I've heard the term unfair lakes is what I've been hearing lately.
Unfair lakes?
Yes.
Yeah, just lakes. And wind. It can get windy. Okay. The condition of the course is outstanding. We have a new superintendent. And holy shit, like what he's done in, I think it's been a year and a half, has just been phenomenal. So the condition of the course is probably the thing that gets talked about a lot right now.
What yardage are we looking at?
What's that?
What's the yardage of the course?
I don't know what the maximum yardage is.
It's under 7,000, I would think.
I think so.
My question is, do you mind setting up a, you know, standing tea time for us for Sunday mornings? Is good, like real early. We're good.
I'm more interested about the range. Tell us about the practice facility. I know you guys are on grass a couple days a week.
Yeah, so we, unfortunately, because of COVID, we didn't get to the grass tee last summer because when we go forward on the grass tees, we lose, we lose 4 stalls. Okay. So with COVID and golf, and it just, we're so busy that we just couldn't really afford to use the extra stalls. So we still do have a grass tee for our lessons. So we do use that quite a bit for our private lessons.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I found it very funny, like going there for the first time. And I guess this is an Edmonton thing. Edmonton's not that big. But I found like when I came to Mayfair, I was like, God, this is very like grand looking. When you like pull in, you see the clubhouse, you're like, this is public? Really? Like, this is big.
Facility,
it's a huge facility.
Yeah,
there's a lot of golf in Edmonton. I got to just defend our Edmonton friends real quick. There is a lot of golf per capita back there because they might be giving us some shots over that comment.
Not going to say there's not, but I think you'll understand what I mean when you go to Mayfair Lakes. You're like, this is big. Like,
I like anything that has the Mayfair in it, I'll be honest.
Carey, I'm gonna bail you out of these hard questions and related to Alberta here. Let's do something fun with Carey tonight, boys. What do you think about a little rapid fire 10?
Oh yeah, God,
I love it. Let's.
You love it.
Do it quick before Wi-Fi cuts out.
Yeah, it'll be perfect Wi-Fi cutout when I don't want to answer a question.
All right, Carey, rapid fire 10 rapid fire questions. Do you have a calculator handy?
No.
Good. Oh, okay, you won't need it, so you're safe. First question. What's in the bag? What are you playing right now for 6? Are you on Team Titleist? Team Taylor?
Well, no, not if I'm like the Brooks Koepka. I just play what I want.
You're a golf town gal.
Breaking irons.
It is all Titleist. It's just a mishmash of old and new, and yeah.
Okay, well, give us a little talk through the bag here. What do you like? What do you hate?
I have AP2 irons. I've got a 56 feet folky 60 degree. Actually, my 60 degree I won with Smooths at the UBC fundraiser. So that was fun. Two really old hybrids, I think a 913 Threewood and a TS1 driver.
Those are the best.
A Trillium putter.
Sick. Okay.
Like that. What kind of ball are you playing? I'm going to say it's probably obvious, but we got to ask.
Probably one.
Okay. Are you an outfit girl when you're on the golf course? Are you pretty have to get matched up? Do you get dressed in the dark? I know you're known for your multiple layers of clothing, so
maybe that's pretty much it. I'm known for my hoodies and my rain pants and my Titleist hat, and that's pretty much it.
I see lots of social media where they're like, guess how many layers Carrie has on? That's pretty funny.
That's a real thing.
Seven.
Yeah.
You look like a homeless person out there teaching on the range.
Yeah.
He's really all about internal temperature management, right? Like one layer on, I got to take off my compression layers. Yeah.
Human resource and environment management. You got to have like a snuggie, a hoodie,
that's
a garbage
what that degree
bag.
Was for.
Sounds like homeostasis to me. Biodome.
Question four of the rapid fire, not so rapid fire. Are you superstitious when you mark your ball? Now everybody kind of interprets this differently. So give us two answers. How do you mark your ball in the green? Is there anything superstitious? Like,
well,
an old bone from a family member. And then what about your golf ball? Do you Sharpie it any particular way? Swear words, graphic pictures, anything like that?
No, pink dot to the right of the logo. Always been like that since I played tournament golf when I was young.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about on the greens?
What's that?
What about on the greens? Like, do you use something with Aunt Trudy's ashes in it to mark your ball or coin?
No, that's just whatever. I probably piss people off because I never have anything. Like, I actually have this here, but I like, honestly, I'm like shoving tees in the ground. I never have anything.
You know, funny story. I played with a guy the other day and he marked his ball with a lighter.
Yeah, anything I can find, a leaf.
I played with C-Pays at the Northern Bear and I marked my ball with an AirPod.
Yeah. You know what? Oh, sidebar, you should go back and watch some highlights from the Masters. Mark Leishman uses a ball mark that's on his belt buckle.
Yeah, they have the magnetic ones.
Yeah, but like, when have you ever seen a guy on tour rocking that?
Oh, that's a good
the leash, man.
Yeah, that's leash style.
Yeah, fanny pack. All right, question number five. What does a Kerry Moffitt range warm-up look like? Maybe a competitive warm-up and maybe like, oh God, trunk slam. I got 5 minutes. What do I do?
I'm always coming in hot. That's basically it. If I had a choice now, knowing what I know now, if I had a choice, I would definitely do some sort of dynamic warm-up. I won't even care about hitting a ball. So if I can like do a little bit to get my body warmed up, what I would teach somebody who really cared about how they were performing.
Yes.
Burpees in the parking lot.
Keep it consistent, keep it simple. And you know, a lot of newer competitive players just get to the range 3 hours before and you know, hit two buckets of balls. That's always one of the things I have to coach out of the rookies, because they're so used to having 2 hours before they tee off. And with the girls, like, we are on a strict 1 hour before the first tee time. Like that, like, we eat and we do everything first. We need like 1 hour and that's it.
Yeah, you're not there to practice, you're there to warm.
Yeah, so the rookies,
so if you're working on it, you get back there.
Yeah, the rookies always struggle. Yeah,
for sure. I like that. So something dynamic, what would you suggest? Maybe give us a little 5 minute warm up.
So I have a hip injury, so another travel story. Fell downstairs in Costa Rica. It's fine.
We battled through.
Towel or towel?
Fully clothed. Okay,
there you go.
It's done with clothes.
So for me, it's definitely trying to roll it out with a lacrosse ball. Just doing anything I can do to get that hip kind of unlocked and moving.
Have you ever tried the Theragun?
I love the Theragun. Yes.
I'm thinking, yeah, like I have this vision of like a little P90X circuit real quick, followed by some Theragun, and you'd be ready to go. You'd be sprinting. You're like, I'll run to my next shot. Thank you.
The Thera roll.
They're all love you.
Marcy's pointing to our Theragun selection. It's
there you go. Yeah, it's a 4-Jack Theragun sponsorship. Love that. Turn snack. How do you fuel up at the turn? Do you just go for a couple beers, maybe a margarita, a hot dog, protein shake, pack of cigarettes? What's your fuel up?
What is it? Well, at, like a, any kind of summery cider, beer, that's always a good one.
Have you heard of Hecho before? Tequila soda in a can.
No, I haven't.
Oh, baby.
Okay. I'll have to find, I'll have to find that.
The word on the screen is it tastes like summer.
Tastes like summer without the hangover is the nice thing.
It tastes like summer. We'll get you some. Don't worry.
All right.
We're friends, right?
Yeah. Are we, yeah? Okay, we're all friends now. Yeah.
All right, it's the cliche question of the evening in the rapid fire, not so rapid fire. Your dream foursome, dead or alive. Give us four players. You'd be the fifth. You'd be the five ball.
Kane Stewart.
Nice.
My dad.
Yeah.
And Annika.
Give us one more. You're going to play five ball.
Party ball. Let's go with... I'd like to play with Lydia Ko.
Oh, I like that.
Interesting.
Well, you don't want to watch every single putt go in? Weird. I would love to see that.
I don't love her that much, but that's a good pick. Like, she's an amazing, amazing player. I think yeah. I just have this, like, PXG disconnect. I don't know.
Yeah, that one. Dr.
I've been seeing PXG get just lit up on Jake Hutt's Instagram lately. Like, he's just posting everyone sending in all their nasty messages about PXG. It's quite crazy. What I liked was your Payne Stewart pick. Yeah. That caught me out of left field. I was like, okay.
Was this somebody you spent a lot of time watching or idolizing as a child growing up? Or
a little bit of that. And then when they used to have the PGA Tour event up here in Northview. I got to see him play there. Wow. Yeah, it was one of his, because did he not pass away after he played? I think he after it was the US close Open. To that. Yeah. I just loved him. I loved he just, yeah.
Somewhere in there? Yeah. So
when you played golf with Payne Stewart, would you be wearing the knickers as well? Like, is that kind of like, would everyone have to show up? You gotta.
Oh, actually, maybe not. I don't think I would. I think it would just be more special if he was in them.
Okay. Shit, you have
to. I really feel like only he could do that.
I'd rather see him.
Like idiots.
I'd rather see him play golf in a towel. There we go. Maybe not.
You wouldn't be watching him play golf in a towel for very long.
Moving along. Hole in one, Carrie. Have you had one? How many? If you've had lots, don't brag too long. Give us the story.
Zero.
Yes.
None.
We're all in the club. Welcome to the team.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get one this year just to like get out of this group here. Like, I'm done with this.
Albatross. Any close ones that you wanna?
Yeah. Yeah. Just not a.
Let's not go there.
Yeah. No,
it's too painful. Bad. Thanks for bringing it up.
I don't know if it's painful. I feel like it's just like it's like going AA. You just gotta sit there and talk your way through it. Like, one day it's gonna happen. One day we'll get out of this.
Share the war stories.
Question number 8 on the rapid fire, not so rapid fire 10. What is your favorite golf course? Maybe give us one in Canada and one internationally, or one you've had the opportunity to play globally.
And in dudes.
Okay, that was easy. That just rolled right off the tongue.
I've been down there 4 times.
Which course is your favorite, though?
So I went down with a couple pros the year it opened and played Bandon. Sick. And then I went back and played Bandon and Pacific the next year. And then it kind of got busy after that because then everybody found out about it. So it was a few years after that. So I've only really played those two courses. I actually, you'll like this story. It was my birthday. It was 2 years ago, I guess, maybe 3 years ago in January. And I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to jump in the car and drive to Bandon. So jumped in the car by myself, drove all the way down to Bandon, I had booked a tee time, and they actually will book a single. So they just put me with a group. Show up, And I walk to the first tee and it's three dudes. And they're just like, you know, they're just average hackers. And I walk up and introduce myself, and the look on their face was just pure defeat. They're just like, oh God, do we have to play with this one? And they were on a boys trip, and I come walking up and crash the freaking their day. Good. And then so all three of them go and they tee off, and then they go to walk up to the forward tees. And I was like, no, fellas, it's fine. I'll tee off from here. And I outdrive them, and they're just like, and they're like, oh, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I'm a flight attendant. And then basically the second hole, they're like, you are not. What do you do? And I was like, I'm a golf pro. And by like the third hole, we're like just drinking out of flasks, and they were my best friends by the end of the round.
I'm going to say, I think a lot of our male listeners right now would probably be wondering if you're available for marriage. So
yeah, just
be prepared to be inundated with messages. I've never heard that come out of a female's mouth before, but that's amazing. Get in the car and drive to Bannon and then just own three guys on the tee. That's magic.
Next time you do that, do you mind throwing out a text? Like, if you need a partner to ride down with.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about making a drive. Love it.
We need you there for sure if it's anytime soon, but you got those quarantines.
I know.
Damn, forgot about those.
Soon, hopefully. Question number 9 of the rapid fire, not so rapid fire. And then I'm going to pass it over to Chris for the final question of the evening. Your best score on or off the golf course? You can kind of interpret this two ways.
Have you noticed how we have questions that are multi-interpreted, right?
I know.
We do that here. And I like it. I'm just giving you some time to think right now. I also like a little team meeting for a quick second while Carrie's thinking. I really love the 5-ball instead of the 4-ball, right? Like,
I like the party ball.
Yeah, love it. Back to you, Carrie.
Best score. I would say I'll go with the traditional. I shot my lowest score is 70 at Westwood Plateau.
That's a great score.
Yeah. That's why my passwords are always 69 because I 3-putted for a 70. Just it still hurts. It hurts deep.
I hope your password's not 3-putt 69.
I gotta sign off now and change all my path.
And I would say the my interpretation best score would be landing the job at UBC.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
I would imagine that would be the highlight, to be honest. The way that you kind of speak about it, I mean, you can clearly tell that is the most important thing for you. Like,
I love nice. It. I love Mayfair and I love UBC, and I have a pretty good life.
Mm-hmm. You'll have an interesting perspective on this. I mean, you're quite vibrant towards the game, but I'm sure you have an opinion. If you could change one thing about the game, professionally or on the amateur side, what would you change? You can split that up into two answers if you want as well.
I definitely. If I was to change one thing, it would be dress codes.
Definitely.
I agree. Second emotion.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a disruptor, you know, within reason in the golf industry. I've always spoke my mind and probably
you? No.
To a detriment at some point. But yeah, I think, you know, making the game a little bit more accessible and a little bit more relatable to especially a younger generation who, you know, could look at this and think it's kind of a boring sport, or it's especially, you know, women, minorities, you know, come into golf and it's just an old man, white sport. And I want to make this game so much more diverse. And I just like what I believe is if you love golf, then I love you. And I don't care where you come from, and I don't care what you wear, and I don't care, you know, if you have the money, then if you don't have money, like, I don't care. Just if you love the game that I've grown up loving my entire life, that's kind of saved me at times in my career. And, you know, that's kind of the thing I would love to change is to bring more people into the game.
I think it's safe for us to say we love you too.
Aww.
Question 11. Question 11. When are we playing golf?
Yeah.
Anytime. I have Sunday Mondays off.
That's the pressing question. Okay, we'll definitely line something up then.
We can do that. Yeah, that was the right question to actually ask. That's what I should have asked instead. Yeah. I think I like what you kind of said there. Getting more, we always talk about this, getting more people in the game, and like you kind of mentioned something, whether you have the money or not. I just wish they could put, like, for the people that don't have the money, like, you have parks around here. Like, can we not just have like fake greens set up so I can go chip and putt places for free? Like,
well, yeah, like, and like if you think about it though, most public or semi-private golf courses have a putting green,
but
that
people won't go. It's intimidating. What's that? People won't go. It's intimidating, and they don't think that they belong there.
That's true.
Yeah. I actually won't go to a golf course that I used to even work at just because I'm nervous they're going to be like, hey, yo, what are you doing here, right?
Just putting, man.
I'm just putting, man. I'm working on my game.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah.
I love it. We don't want to steal too much of your time tonight, Carrie, but thank you so much for jumping on with us. This is a lot of fun. You need to sort out your Wi-Fi. Hopefully they get the lines right to the water's edge soon enough there. But
yeah,
so much fun. And we are so excited to get out and play some golf with you this summer.
Yeah, that sounds great. It was really nice meeting you guys.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Barry.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. It's great getting to know you. Keep doing what you do for the game. You're an inspiration. It's amazing.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody. And we will chat with you guys next week. Bye-bye.